Chapter 2. £5,000 to us? What's 5 million? He says. What's 5,000 million? Money will be nothing to us. We shall never be able to spend it fast enough. We'll try what we can do, sir, says Tom. We will, says the old gentleman. Your name? Grig, says Tom. The old gentleman embraced him again, very tight, and without speaking another word, dragged him into the house in such an excited manner that it was as much as Tom could do to take his link and ladder with him, and put them down in the passage. Gentlemen, if Tom hadn't been always remarkable for his love of truth, I think you would still have believed him when he said that all this was like a dream. There is no better way for a man to find out whether he is really asleep or awake than calling for something to eat. If he's in a dream, gentlemen, he'll find something wanting in flavor, depend upon it. Tom explained his doubts to the old gentleman, and said that, if there was any cold meat in the house, it would ease his mind very much to test himself at once. The old gentleman ordered up a venison pie, a small ham, and a bottle of very old Madeira. At the first mouthful of pie, and the first glass of wine, Tom smacks his lips and cries out, I'm awake, wide awake. And to prove that he was so, gentlemen, he made an end of them both. When Tom had finished his meal, which he never spoke of afterwards without tears in his eyes, the old gentleman hugs him again, and says, Noble stranger, let us visit my young and lovely niece. Tom, who was a little elevated with the wine, replies, The noble stranger is agreeable. At which words the old gentleman took him by the hand, and led him to the parlor, crying as he opened the door, Here is Mr. Grig, the favorite of the planets. I will not attempt a description of female beauty, gentlemen, for every one of us has a model of his own that suits his own taste best. In this parlor that I'm speaking of, there were two young ladies, and if every gentleman present will imagine two models of his own in their places, and will be kind enough to polish him up to the very highest pitch of perfection, he will then have a faint conception of their uncommon radiance. Besides these two young ladies, there was their waiting woman, that under any other circumstances Tom would have looked upon as a Venus, and besides her, there was a tall, thin, dismal-faced young gentleman, half man and half boy, dressed in a childish suit of clothes very much too short in the legs and arms, and looking, according to Tom's comparison, like one of the wax juveniles from a tailor's door, grown up and run to seed. Now, this youngster stamped his foot upon the ground, and looked very fierce at Tom, and Tom looked fierce at him, for to tell the truth, gentlemen, Tom more than half suspected that, when they entered the room, he was kissing one of the young ladies. And for anything Tom knew, you observe, it might be his young lady, which was not pleasant. Sir, says Tom, before we proceed any further, will you have the goodness to inform me who this young salamander Tom called him that for aggravation? You perceive, gentlemen, who this young salamander may be? That, Mr. Grig, says the old gentleman, is my little boy. He was christened Galileo Isaac Newton Flamsteed. Don't mind him. He's a mere child. And a very fine child too, says Tom, still aggravating, you'll observe, of his age, and as good as fine, I have no doubt. How do you do, my man? With which kind and patronizing expressions, Tom reached up to pat him on the head, and quoted two lines about little boys, from Dr. Watts' hymns, which he had learned at a Sunday school. It was very easy to see, gentlemen, by this youngster's frowning, and by the waiting maid's tossing her head and turning up her nose, and by the young ladies turning their backs and talking together at the other end of the room, that nobody but the old gentleman took very kindly to the noble stranger. Indeed, Tom plainly heard the waiting woman say of her master, that so far from being able to read the stars as he pretended, she didn't believe he knew his letters in them, or at best, that he had got further than words in one syllable, But Tom, not minding this, for he was in spirits after the Madeira, looks with an agreeable air towards the young ladies, and, kissing his hand to both, says to the old gentleman, "Which is which?" "This," says the old gentleman, leading out the handsomest, "if one of 'em could possibly be said to be handsomer than the other, this is my niece, Miss Fanny Barker." "If you'll permit me, miss," says Tom, "being a noble stranger and a favorite of the planets, I will conduct myself as such." With these words, he kisses the young lady in a very affable way, turns to the old gentleman, slaps him on the back, and says, "When's it to come off, my buck?" The young lady colored so deep, and her lip trembled so much, gentlemen, that Tom really thought she was going to cry. But she kept her feelings down, and turning to the old gentleman, says, "Dear uncle, though you have the absolute disposal of my hand and fortune, and though you mean well in disposing of 'em thus, I ask you, whether you don't think this is a mistake? Don't you think, dear uncle," she says, "that the stars must be in error? Is it not possible that the comet may have put 'em out?" "The stars," says the old gentleman, "couldn't make a mistake if they tried. Emma," he says to the other young lady. "Yes, Papa," says she. "The same day that makes your cousin Mrs. Grigg will unite you to the gifted Mooney. No remonstrance, no tears. Now, Mr. Grigg, let me conduct you to that hallowed ground, that philosophical retreat, where my friend and partner, the gifted Mooney of whom I have just now spoken, is even now pursuing those discoveries which shall enrich us with the precious metal, and make us masters of the world. Come, Mr. Grigg," he says. "With all my heart, sir," replies Tom. "And luck to the gifted Mooney, say I, not so much on his account as for our worthy selves." With this sentiment, Tom kissed his hand to the ladies again, and followed them out, having the gratification to perceive, as he looked back, that they were all hanging on by the arms and legs of Galileo Isaac Newton Flamsteed, to prevent him from following the noble stranger, and tearing him to pieces. "Gentlemen, Tom's father-in-law, that was to be, took him by the hand, and having lighted a little lamp, led him across a paved courtyard at the back of the house, into a very large, dark, gloomy room, filled with all manner of bottles, globes, books, telescopes, crocodiles, alligators, and other scientific instruments of every kind. In the center of this room was a stove or furnace, with what Tom called a pot, but which in my opinion was a crucible, in full boil. In one corner was a sort of ladder leading through the roof, and up this ladder the old gentleman pointed, as he said in a whisper, 'The observatory. Mr. Mooney is even now watching for the precise time at which we are to come into all the riches of the earth. It will be necessary for he and I, alone in that silent place, to cast your nativity before the hour arrives. Put the day and minute of your birth on this piece of paper, and leave the rest to me.' 'You don't mean to say,' says Tom, doing as he was told and giving him back the paper, 'that I'm to wait here long, do you? It's a precious dismal place.' 'Hush,' says the old gentleman. 'It's hallowed ground. Farewell.' 'Stop a minute,' says Tom. 'What a hurry you're in. What's in that large bottle yonder?' 'It's a child with three heads,' says the old gentleman, 'and everything else in proportion.' 'Why don't you throw him away?' says Tom. 'What do you keep such unpleasant things here for?' 'Throw him away,' cries the old gentleman. 'We use him constantly in astrology. He's a charm.' 'I shouldn't have thought it,' says Tom, 'from his appearance. Must you go, I say?' The old gentleman makes him no answer, but climbs up the ladder in a greater bustle than ever. Tom looked after his legs till there was nothing of him left, and then sat down to wait, feeling, so he used to say, as comfortable as if he was going to be made a Freemason, and they were heating the pokers. Tom waited so long, gentlemen, that he began to think it must be getting on for midnight at least, and felt more dismal and lonely than ever he had done in all his life. He tried every means of whiling away the time, but it never had seemed to move so slow. First, he took a near view of the child with three heads, and thought what a comfort it must have been to his parents. Then he looked up a long telescope which was pointed out of the window, but saw nothing particular, in consequence of the stopper being on at the other end. Then he came to a skeleton in a glass case, labeled, Skeleton of a Gentleman Prepared by Mr. Mooney, which made him hope that Mr. Mooney might not be in the habit of preparing gentlemen that way without their own consent. 100 times, at least, he looked into the pot where they were boiling the philosopher's stone down to the proper consistency, and wondered whether it was nearly done. When it is, thinks Tom, I'll send out for 6 pennorth of sprats, and turn them into goldfish for a first experiment. Besides which, he made up his mind, gentlemen, to have a country house and a park, and to plant a bit of it with a double row of gas lamps a mile long, and go out every night with a French polished mahogany ladder, and 2 servants in livery behind him, to light them for his own pleasure. At length and at last, the old gentleman's legs appeared upon the steps leading through the roof, and he came slowly down, bringing along with him the gifted Mooney. This Mooney, gentlemen, was even more scientific in appearance than his friend, and had, as Tom often declared upon his word and honor, the dirtiest face we can possibly know of, in this imperfect state of existence. Gentlemen, you are all aware that if a scientific man isn't absent in his mind, he's of no good at all. Mr. Mooney was so absent that when the old gentleman said to him, Shake hands with Mr. Grigg, he put out his leg. Here's a mind, Mr. Grigg, cries the old gentleman in a rapture. Here's philosophy. Here's rumination. Don't disturb him, he says, for this is amazing. Tom had no wish to disturb him, having nothing particular to say, but he was so uncommonly amazing that the old gentleman got impatient and determined to give him an electric shock to bring him to. For you must know, Mr. Grigg, he says, that we always keep a strongly charged battery ready for that purpose. These means being resorted to, gentlemen, the gifted Mooney revived with a loud roar, and he no sooner came to himself than both he and the old gentleman looked at Tom with compassion, and shed tears abundantly. My dear friend, says the old gentleman to the gifted, prepare him. I say, cries Tom, falling back, none of that, you know. No preparing by Mr. Mooney, if you please. Alas, replies the old gentleman, you don't understand us. My friend, inform him of his fate. I can't. The gifted mustered up his voice, after many efforts, and informed Tom that his nativity had been carefully cast, and he would expire at exactly 35 minutes, 27 seconds, and 5/6 of a second past 9 o'clock a.m. on that day 2 months. Gentlemen, I leave you to judge what were Tom's feelings at this announcement, on the eve of matrimony and endless riches. I think, he says in a trembling voice, there must be a mistake in the working of that sum. Will you do me the favor to cast it up again? There is no mistake, replies the old gentleman. It is confirmed by Francis Moore, physician. Here is the prediction for tomorrow 2 months. And he showed him the page, where sure enough were these words, the decease of a great person may be looked for about this time. Which, says the old gentleman, is clearly you, Mr. Grigg. Too clearly, cries Tom, sinking into a chair, and giving one hand to the old gentleman, and one to the gifted. The orb of day has set on Thomas Grigg forever. At this affecting remark, the gifted shed tears again, and the other 2 mingled their tears with his, in a kind, if I may use the expression of Mooney and Company's entire. But the old gentleman, recovering first, observed that this was only a reason for hastening the marriage, in order that Tom's distinguished race might be transmitted to posterity, and requesting the gifted to console Mr. Grigg during his temporary absence, he withdrew to settle the preliminaries with his niece immediately. And now, gentlemen, a very extraordinary and remarkable occurrence took place. For as Tom sat in a melancholy way in one chair, and the gifted sat in a melancholy way in another, a couple of doors were thrown violently open, the two young ladies rushed in, and one knelt down in a loving attitude at Tom's feet, and the other at the gifted's. So far, perhaps, as Tom was concerned, as he used to say, you will say there was nothing strange in this. But you will be of a different opinion, when you understand that Tom's young lady was kneeling to the gifted, and the gifted's young lady was kneeling to Tom. Halloa! Stop a minute! Cries Tom. Here's a mistake. I need condoling with my sympathizing woman, under my afflicting circumstances. But we're out in the figure. Change partners, Mooney. Monster! Cries Tom's young lady, clinging to the gifted. Miss, says Tom, is that your manners? I abjure thee, cries Tom's young lady. I renounce thee. I never will be thine. Thou, she says to the gifted, art the object of my first and all-engrossing passion. Wrapped in thy sublime visions, thou hast not perceived my love. But, driven to despair, I now shake off the woman and avow it. Oh, cruel, cruel man! With which reproach she laid her head upon the gifted's breast, and put her arms about him in the tenderest manner possible, gentlemen. And I, says the other young lady, in a sort of ecstasy that made Tom start, I hereby abjure my chosen husband to. Hear me, goblin. This was to the gifted, hear me. I hold thee in the deepest detestation. The maddening interview of this one night has filled my soul with love. But not for thee. It is for thee, young man, she cries to Tom. As Monk Lewis finely observes, Thomas, Thomas, I am thine, Thomas, Thomas, thou art mine. Mine forever, with which words, she became very tender likewise. Tom and the gifted, gentlemen, as you may believe, looked at each other in a very awkward manner, and with thoughts not at all complimentary to the two young ladies. As to the gifted, I have heard Tom say often that he was certain he was in a fit, and had. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.